Hello, and welcome to the County Conversations podcast, brought to you by FACTS Institute for County Government, with support from the University of Florida, IFAS. I'm Eric Poole, director of the Institute, and I'm happy to bring you our new federal podcast series. Each month, we sit down with the legislative director for the National Association of Counties, Aaron Hurley, to discuss some of the most important issues, policies, and legislation affecting Florida's counties. All of our conversations are videotaped via Zoom and can be viewed on the Studio 67 webpage under the federal policy banner. Thank you for tuning in and hope you enjoy the conversation. Aaron, let's go ahead and get started. If you don't mind, I think let's start where we left off last time. The Congress had just passed the first minibus, which were the six appropriation bills that kept the government running. And then the next day, following our discussion, they were supposed to have passed the second minibus with the other six appropriation bills, which they did. And so I know y'all have put out a summary of all that, but do you want to just go over some of the highlights of those bills?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So as Eric mentioned, the second minibus came out. It's now signed into law. So what that included was funding for the defense, financial services, and general government appropriations bill, homeland security, labor, health and human services and education, the legislative branch, and then state and foreign operations, that all of those spending bills. So there are a couple of key county priorities that were included in that. So one of those is that it provided over $10 billion for critical block grants that support a wide, wide range of county human services support. So specifically, funding went to the Child Care and Development Block Grant, the Social Services Block Grant, and then the Community Services Block Grant. So again, those are kind of like your social safety net block grant programs, many of which are county administered in a handful of states. Moving on to the next priority in there was that there was funding for election security grants to improve the administration of federal elections, also enhancing election technology and making security improvements as authorized under the Help America Vote Act, also known as HAVA. It was around, I think we ended up getting $55 million for those election security grants, which is a decrease from last year. But what was happening is that folks were trying to actually completely zero out that funding. So, you know, the fact that we were able to even keep it is definitely a huge win. Another area that we're looking at is the, around FEMA. So there was $3.2 billion for FEMA grants to state and local governments, which include the state Homeland Security Grant Program. And then there's also there was also $324 million allocated to that SAFER grant program to assist local fire departments. But that funding opportunity did close back in at the beginning, or you know, last week in April, but you know, significant amount of funding there. And then finally, another key highlight is that there was $5.7 billion for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act programs that ultimately those WIOA programs help counties tackle and overcome challenges facing job seekers and employers within your communities. So a lot of great highlights in there. We did do a full analysis of the FY 2024 both of the appropriations bills. I can throw that in the chat here in just a little bit. So overall, between the first and second, really major key county priorities included in that. The second item that I wanted to talk about today is regarding the U.S. Department of Treasury's newly released FAQs for their definition of obligations, specifically their obligation interim final rule. So kind of just take a quick step back. What the obligation interim final rule was is that it came out back in November of 2023. And this interim final rule specifically was for that $65.1 billion of funding that was authorized under the American Rescue Plan Act that went directly to every single county, parish, and borough. So when Treasury released their obligation interim final rule back in November of 2023, NACO had some major concerns with the obligation interim final rule, just namely because there were a lot of limitations around what counties could do when we're talking about obligating funds, which the deadlines associated with the ARPA State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund are December 31st of 2024. And then the expenditure deadline is December 31st of 2026. So this obligation interim final rule, it really limited county's ability to obligate funds for, you know, a wide range of areas that we're looking to do. Namely, you weren't able to cover personnel costs for like public safety, public health workers that are currently being paid by the American Rescue Plan Act dollars. Other limitations were that you weren't allowed to cover unforeseen costs with funds that were already obligated. So again, you would have had to return those funds back to Treasury. So that's all to say, a lot of concerns NACO expressed to the Department of Treasury. They released these new FAQs around the obligation, the definition of obligation. Ultimately, huge wins for counties included in those. And I won't go into too much detail, but Eric, I'm going to share a presentation with you that goes into the weeds of this. But just kind of some summary key takeaways that you all should know is that first, that limitation around personnel costs, now that's totally gone. So what you can do is obligate funds to any eligible position under Treasury's 2022 final rule for the ARPA State and Local Fiscal Recovery Fund, so long as that position has been set up prior to December 31st of 2024. And so you can use the ARPA funds to cover those personnel costs for those individuals through December 31st of 2026. So previously, you could only cover those personnel costs for individuals that were responsible for like reporting and compliance for ARPA. So now it's, you know, any sort of county employee that's eligible under Treasury guidance. So that's a huge win there. Another big win is that it's regarding personnel costs. Under the obligation interim final rule, if your county decided, all right, hey, you know, let's obligate $1 million towards these five positions that we want to, you know, cover their personnel costs with our ARPA dollars over the next, between 2024 and 2026. If you decided to do that, you would have had to provide an estimate of how much you projected those positions would be over the next 2 years. You would have had to provide that estimate to Treasury by the end of this month, April 30th. Under these new obligation interim final rules, you now have until April of 2025, if you're a larger county, or you have even farther down the line of July of 2025 to provide those estimates. So, you know, definitely a considerable amount of time to do those estimates rather than right away. And then the final point that I wanted to mention too, a new flexibility under the obligation FAQs is that now if your county has obligated funds by the December 31st, 2024 deadline, but, you know, so everything's accounted for, but during that 2 year period between 2024 and 2026, say that, you know, a project may have fallen through or, you know, no longer is in compliance. Maybe an auditor got back to you and said, hey, we thought this was eligible. Now it's not. Now you have a surplus of funds that aren't accounted for. What you can do now is that you can actually reclassify those funds and use them for another eligible use under the Treasury guidance from 2022. Simply, all you have to do is demonstrate that you had a contract in place prior to December 31st of 2024. So your ability to reclassify funds gives you a lot of leeway in reorganizing funds to make sure that you're meeting the needs of your communities and also so that you are not giving back any funds to the Department of Treasury by the December 31st, 2026 expenditure deadline. So those are a couple of huge items in there. We're really happy to see the FAQs, and ultimately it will give folks a lot more flexibility as we are coming up on that December 2024 obligation deadline. So it's very, very happy to see that. Moving on from ARPA and the Treasury FAQs, also, I wanted to discuss the Affordable Connectivity Program. I think I touched on that last month's call, but I just wanted to bring that up again because so Congress has not officially taken up the bill yet, despite there being like over, I think, 215 co-sponsors in the House. bipartisan, and in the Senate, there are around 33 bipartisan co-sponsors. So Congress just hasn't taken it up yet. Obviously, the energy is kind of being sucked up by like FISA, obviously the defense bills that are coming out, et cetera. But that's all to say, there is a recent update around pushing to make sure that this Affordable Connectivity Program extension bill gets to the House floor for a vote. So just the other week, Congresswoman Yvette Clark from New York, she's a Democrat. She introduced a discharge petition. So what a discharge petition pretty much is that you need to be able to get 218 signatures to then automatically get it to the House floor for a vote. So, you know, obviously NACO's very, very supportive of providing more funding for the Affordable Connectivity Program, which, if you're unfamiliar with that program, what it does in a nutshell is that it provides discounted internet broadband to low-income households that are already enrolled in other federal public assistance programs. So think of like food stamps, the federal welfare program, which is called the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. So pretty much this would just extend funding for the Affordable Connectivity Program. So NACO's really pushing hard, asking folks to reach out to specifically their House representatives, urging them to sign on to this discharge petition so that the House can vote on the extending the Affordable Connectivity Program. So that's around broadband, Affordable Connectivity Program, also somewhat related. Yeah.
Why couldn't they just put that into one of this in the minibus?
So the great question, Eric. So they did try to do that, but ultimately it was rejected just because of like the price tag associated with it and how much funding that, you know, obviously the supplemental already had in it. So what they're trying to do with this is, you know, what this standalone bill would do is pretty much it would simply just make sure that funding for the Affordable Connectivity Program would go throughout 2024. So until the end of the year, because right now the ACP has totally run out of money and, you know, households are starting to come off of it. So it's a little bit different than doing like an annual appropriations, but it was because the price tag associated with it pretty much. So also kind of in the broadband telecom world is the implementation of the 988 suicide crisis hotline. So this replaced the original suicide lifeline hotline, right? So 988 is in full swing. It's being implemented across the country. It provides crisis services to individuals that call 988. The major issue here, though, is that as 988 is currently set up, so if I'm, say, so I live in Washington, D.C., right? Say if I'm taking a trip out to California and I'm in a crisis, I call 988, that my area code, since 988 is based on the area code, it would connect me to crisis services back in Washington, D.C., obviously delay the services that I so desperately need in the immediate moment. And so that's the major issue with 988 implementation right now. NACO has been pushing. There is a bill in Congress to address this issue. It's called the geo-routing issue. Ultimately, NACO pushed it really, really hard. It was, again, a bipartisan bill. Now there is no longer a need for congressional action because the Federal Communications Commission chairwoman, Rosen Worcel, she came out and announced, hey, we know that this is an issue. We're going to do this by ourselves. We're going to address the geo routing issue and we're going to release, you know, interim final rule pretty much. So the FCC is working on that. The FCC commission has the leadership has already met a couple of times, but they're going to meet later this month to officially adopt that notice of proposed rulemaking. So they're going to be releasing that. And of course, NACO will be responding and will update counties around, you know, exactly what it looks like for the FCC to address these geo-routing issues. But again, huge win for counties. Finally, it's going to be addressed around these implementations. So it'll be much more streamlined. And then one of the other items that I did want to talk to you all about is regarding PFAS, also known as those forever chemicals. So you all may have seen this, but the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, just last week, they issued their first ever national legally enforceable drinking water standard for PFAS. So the final regulation is very aggressive, and it sets limits for PFOA and PFOS. So there's a lot of acronyms here, and I'm not going to try to say the whole name, but because it's very long. But those limits for PFOA and PFOS, those are the two best understood types of PFAS. So PFAS kind of is an umbrella of all these other chemicals. So for those two chemicals, PFOA and PFOS, or PFOS, those are at 4 parts per trillion, which is also close to 0 parts per trillion. So that's the standard that EPA is trying to set. What this rule also does is that it also sets a maximum level for 3 other types of PFAS at 10 parts per million. Ultimately, what this means for counties is that this new regulation will have really, really significant impacts on water utilities across the country, including those owned and operated by counties. Not only will it impact the counties itself, it will also impact our residents because they are like the ratepayers, right? So residents will also be impacted by this too. Under the regulation, when EPA did announce it, they estimated that the regulation will cost $1.5 billion per year to implement, but other groups, other associations estimate that the annual cost is between $2.5 and $3.2 billion. So that's what's happening there. And then also, in addition to this new rule that just came out from EPA, there is also another rule that's going to be coming out just probably next week from the White House's Office of Management and Budget. It's called the CERCLA rule. Ultimately, what that would do is that it would determine that PFAS chemicals will be categorized as hazardous. And so therefore, that really will put counties on the hook for being required, even though we're passive receivers, being required to pay for the remediation of the various sites where PFAS chemicals are. So like, think of counties being required to set up Superfund sites pretty much. So a lot of stuff is happening in the drinking water space, a lot of restrictions. So NACO, I will say, we're working on an analysis right now of this new EPA rule. And also once that other CERCLA rule from Office of Management and Budget, once that does come out, we will definitely inform all of you as well too. But that's to say a lot of stuff coming down the pipeline. So I'm going to take a breather right there. There is one more item that I wanted to discuss that's around like the federal uniform guidance, but Eric, I'm going to stop there. If there are questions, I know that's a lot of information, so don't want to bombard people with everything.
So I guess, I mean, with the PFAS, and I'm just coming up to speed on this, I guess a lot of this came out of the class action suit, which I think required the companies to fund an independent study for this. And it's my understanding, this is just based on, I think there was an article in the New York Times, that the rule covers, 6 known PFAS compounds?
Yes.
But there are thousands of others that are out there that they have not determined, and probably, I don't know if they ever will, determined are, have some sort of correlation to bodily injury, cancer, that sort of thing. So okay, so you got the rule that covers the 6. Are there any other studies that are going to continue to look at this? Because I could see not only the health and safety issue for everybody, but just the fiscal impact for local governments.
Yeah, I mean, I could only imagine that they are going to continue doing other studies around this. I mean, EPA, this is like a top priority around addressing like chemical contamination of drinking water. So, you know, top priority for them, and sure that continued regulations will come out. I will say, though, with this rule, because it is so aggressive, I mean, it's going to be really, really difficult for EPA to monitor and implement. So I think this is going to be definitely kind of what EPA is going to be focusing on over the next couple of years, because when you're thinking about almost setting the standards to like zero parts per million, I mean, that's almost like impossible to enforce to a certain extent, right? So I think EPA is really going to have to grapple with the fact like, okay, we need to focus on implementation before we move on and categorize all of these other thousands of chemicals as hazardous or that, you know?
Yeah. So can I ask if we can go back to the budget and just help me understand the Washington speak? Was the too many buses, it's funny to say, the too many buses that were that passed, are those just considered extensive CRs or is that considered a budget? I mean, even though it's only like 6 months, 7 months.
So it is considered like an actual budget, but okay. Obviously it's not quote unquote short term, even okay. though it is shorter term, yeah. right? Yeah. It's not considered short term because it goes until September 30th.
And then can we just quickly, and then we'll let you go, just on some of the policy riders and yeah. extensions that were in there. I think National Flood Insurance, the NFIP program is extended. Is that correct?
Yes. NFIP. Yeah. NFIP was extended as well as there were other extensions for like that federal welfare program that I also mentioned as well too. A couple of other kind of key wins is that there were permanent reforms to the institutions for mental disease. So like IMD for short. So yep. permanent reforms to the IMD to support individuals with substance use disorders. Pretty much what it does is that it makes the option to waive IMD exclusion for substance use disorder treatment services permanent. So this is the first of its kind that ultimately, you know, we were able to get across the finish line. This was part of a larger advocacy effort that NACO was working on. So just wanted to mention that as well too.
And then anything on the inmate medical?
So nothing on that yet. Nothing on that yet, unfortunately. We pushed for that extremely hard. Ultimately, what we're now shifting our focus to is that likely, I mean, for fiscal year 2025, right? So lawmakers, mostly on the House side, they're already starting to sit down and trying to, you know, negotiate what funding for fiscal year 2025 looks like, which begins on October 1st. Realistically, it's an election year. They're not going to deal with a budget at that point. I think likely that's going to be pushed until the new year. So what we're looking at for the Medicaid inmate exclusion policy, that's part of like the larger support act reauthorization efforts that NACO has been involved in, that encompasses other behavioral health priorities for us. It's looking like that the support act reauthorization, real negotiations are going to take place during that lame duck few months in between, of course, when the president is elected up until the new year. So we're looking at, you know, November, December, probably being the time when like mental behavioral health is really going to take a forefront in negotiations.
Okay. I got one kind of weird outlier question because it shows up in your report and it's on heavy truck weight exemptions. And it was specific to, I think, one or two states. I think West Virginia, Mississippi. This is coming out of your report, Mississippi. Yeah. It's for ag. All right. So I think anything above 88,000 pounds. There's been a push over the years to increase truck weights on federal roads or federal aid roads, yes. state roads. There's a coalition that works with us from time to time to give us heads up on bills that are being filed to deal with this. Is this an issue that has NACO addressed this before?
Yes. Yeah. So there actually was a bill introduced by Congressman Dusty Johnson of South Dakota. And so pretty much he introduced a bill that would give the governor full authority to waive anything. So, you know, it doesn't matter how much a truck would weigh. It could go on county roads. So NACO did weigh in on that. This was probably last month, I would say, maybe a month or two ago. And we did say that we're extremely concerned with the bill, just given the fact that shouldn't unilaterally be up to one person to decide how much weight a road can take when we're the ones that are actually paying for the roads to be repaved, repaired, et cetera. So this is something that actually you know, surprisingly has come up a lot over the last 6 months at NACO. So we do have like very specific policy around it. Again, it's one around like local control. We want to make sure that we do have input when we're talking about the maintenance of our, of the roads that we own and operate. So yeah, there, we've weighed in on this a fair amount.
And do you have a sense for, has USDOT and Federal Highway weighed in on that? What's their position with respect to their roads?
They haven't honestly weighed in too much around that. I would say this is more kind of like it's like a congressional kind of pain point right now, more than like USDOT, since of course USDOT is the one that's like, okay, we'll provide resources to repair those roads. But they haven't like released any sort of like regulation or of that sort. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we got a couple of commissioners on. I don't know if they've got any questions. I didn't see anything in the chat. And if they don't raise their hand, we're going to release you. We've had a really bunch of strange technical problems over here. I was coughing into the microphone because I drank coffee. And then we had some audio stuff and I got a different background now. So I'm not sure what happens. Sorry. But Aaron, thank you again. And if you can do this again next month and we'll, you know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do an update and then pause until we get through the summer because we've got our conference and then the NACO conference here in Florida.
Absolutely. That all sounds good to me.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you Bye. So much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.